This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
How we doing, Trip?
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise show. I'm your host, Norman Lau, and thank you for joining us once again in the conference room aboard the NX-01. And this week, as always, I'm joined by my fellow compatriots in the conference room, my brothers in the blue skivvies, Will Nguyen, Trek FM's content manager. Will, how you doing?
I am good. I'm excited to talk about our favorite pigs in space, the Tellarites.
Pigs in space.
That's such a dated reference to anyone who watched The Muppet Show back in the 70s. But I watched it in reruns when I was growing up, so I love that stuff.
Do you think the pigs in space were inspired by our subject matter today, or was that just a purely coincidental kind of thing?
In my headcanon, they were.
No, I'm kidding. And to help us bring home the bacon, if you will.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Tommy Kraft, the director and creator and writer and tailor of Star Trek Horizon. Tommy, how you doing?
I'm swell, thank you. It's wonderful to be back and to be back with bacon.
Everyone loves bacon, right? Well, I guess vegetarians wouldn't, but I heard that vegetarians like the smell of bacon, not necessarily what bacon stands for. So, brought to you, Enterprise. So. Warp 5, brought to you by bacon.
Yes. Brought to you by Ford Oscar Mayer.
There you go. This week, we'll be talking about the Tellarites, who are arguably one of the more interesting races in Star Trek for probably these following two reasons. Number one, one of the more prominent founding members of the Federation. And number two, they only really have a handful of episodes to prove this fact. And Will, this is part of what you wrote. Do you agree that the Tellarites had that type of resonance because they're lesser known and so important, but we never really got a chance to see them? I'm just asking you this like prior to like what we're going to get into, so hold that thought. And so tonight we're going to be talking about what we know in canon about the Tellarites and what we can fill in the gaps wise of our knowledge, if you will. And I'd like to start this show off with Will's response, because when I was crafting the show, I wanted to see what we really haven't come up with yet. And because Will is our content coordinator, he really had this great idea of digging into probably one of the more important races that we've never really talked about, either here on this show or just in general on Enterprise, because we never had a chance to. So, Will, why don't you start us off and tell us a little bit about why you chose Tellarites as the subject for this show, and continue the thought that I completely interrupted you on in that earlier question.
No worries. I think the Tellarites are probably the most intriguing race because they're very much in the same boat as the Andorians, but we don't know that much about them. Although with the Andorians, although they have a limited set of episodes based upon them, we have Shran, who's an incredible secondary character, who through him we learn a lot about the Andorians in Enterprise. But with the Tellarites, outside of the Babel arc, which we're going to talk about in this episode, we really don't have a character that we're going to see a lot of their culture and civilization through. We do have moments in which we find a lot about them. But, you know, they're like the Andorians in the sense that they're a prominent founding member of the Federation, and yet we don't know that much about them. And, you know, compared to the Andorians, who we don't know that much about, you know, anyway, they're, you know, with the Tellarites, even less so. So I think it's very intriguing because, you know, I mentioned in our notes that, you know, talking about Enterprise is very much filling in the gaps of what if, and the Tellarites are probably one of the most what if races of Star Trek in terms of filling in where they are in canon, because if you look at the entirety of the Star Trek universe, they are referenced later on and seen briefly in other works, but we really don't know much about them, but they're referenced. So I think for us to delve in, this is very much an exercise in what can we extrapolate, which is, you know, a fun part of being an Enterprise fan.
Now, Tommy, before the show, we were talking about this a little bit, and you said that you weren't really all that familiar with the Tellarites from the standpoint of the history and the overall canon of Star Trek. And why do you think that that is? Is it because they just weren't really well referenced or explained away at all with just the little bit that we saw in the original series?
Yes. And the fact that I really blame this on the writers. It's not a, I don't think it's a budget issue, because we had plenty of other, in terms of the other four shows from the original series, we had a lot of strange alien races, a lot of out there makeup. And I think there were plenty of opportunities to show the Tellarites and the Andorians, and they never did. And I think that did a disservice to the lore of Star Trek, because there's a lot of great stories you could have told there in the 24th century with both the Andorians and the Tellarites, and it just never happened. And so I'm glad they went back to that for Enterprise, but that's why when I came to Enterprise, I wasn't really familiar with the Tellarites or the Andorians. I'd of course heard of them, but only really peripherally. So I didn't really have any sort of history to draw from with that. And unfortunately, it makes for not good prequel material, in my opinion, because there's not much you can build up to. There, it's just a total blank slate. And in any case, I think Enterprise did a great job. I just wish that in the other incarnations, they had talked more about the Tellarites.
I have two quick points to that. That actually brings up a really good point in terms of, for me, I'm a big Deep Space Nine fan, so watching the Dominion War, I was saying, where are the Andorians? Wouldn't they be the perfect Starfleet member race to fight against the Jem'Hadar, or, you know, to lead a squadron of Defiant class ships, because they're so warrior-like and Tellarites leading that? But all you see is humans, right? So that's a really good point, Tommy. But I think second point, just to play devil's advocate, is do you think it's, you know, you said you bring up a good point in terms of it might not be a budgetary issue because they had other alien races there. But maybe it's not necessarily a budgetary issue, but a technical issue in terms of making the Andorians and Tellarites look believable. Because I know the Andorians, there's a big question in terms of how can you make the antenna realistic until they figure out a way to make it move. And with the Tellarites, obviously, the Enterprise, they look completely different than what we saw them in Journey to Babel. So I don't know if even by, let's say, the mid-1980s when Next Generation came out, could they have done the Tellarites in a way that, you know, wasn't hokey, and that's why they kind of backed away from it? I don't know.
I think they certainly could. I mean, of course you're talking more about a feature budget here, but you think like 1990, 1991, when we had the first Ninja Turtles movie, and for what they did at the time with the incredible costume they had there with the remote-controlled headpieces and the whole body outfits. And of course, like I said, that's a feature. So I think technically this stuff was feasible. It might not have been for a TV budget. I think it would have been harder for the Andorians, you're right, with the moving antenna. But with the Tellarites, I feel like they're not that much more complex than, say, it's a little bit more complex than a Klingon, but not that much. It's full face instead of just forehead. But even Klingons have a lot. They have stuff going on with their nose. They have all this facial hair a lot of the times. And so I think at least by DS9, like you said, with the Andorians, it would have been cool to have them there, but it would have been really cool to have the Tellarites there as a founding member of the Federation. What would the species have had to said or had, what would they have to say about the Dominion War? I don't know. It would have been interesting.
Well, let's dial this back for our listeners and give them a point of reference to where the Tellarites came from, which is weird because they actually came before Enterprise, and Enterprise technically, timeline-wise, came before the original series, but the Tellarites were first seen in the original series classic episode, Journey to Babel. And this episode is notable for so many reasons. It's the first ever Star Trek episode to feature a variety, a multitude of alien races, because it was the Enterprise hosting delegations from different worlds, specifically from the Federation, to a peace conference. And then we see the Tellarite ambassador, Ambassador Gav, and we get to see other delegates. And, of course, we got to see the very famous now use of the Vulcan hand salute when Spock saluted his father, Ambassador Sarek of Vulcan. And the interesting thing about this episode also is that you get to see a snippet of Tellarite culture. You get to see a snippet of Andorian physiology, the antennae, which were a telltale sign of the Andorians, the blue skin. And I guess in 1966 or 1967, when you saw this type of prosthesis work, it wasn't really all that too terribly noticeable, because it's probably better than anything that you've seen on screen at the time. With the exception of the Twilight episode, which was amazing, when you had the Eye of the Beholder, where you actually saw what I thought could have looked like a Tellarite, the quote-unquote, the pig nose-looking misshapen features of the nurse and doctor at the end reveal. But I digress. So back in Journey to Babel, we are dealing with the founding fathers of the Federation in 2151, the Tellarites, the Vulcans, the humans, and the Andorians. So, Will, when you saw Journey to Babel, or where when you referenced it again for this show, what stood out to you most about the Tellarites that you didn't really see before, or now that you've been so heavily steeped in Enterprise, did they do a good job in Enterprise projecting what we know of the Tellarites from Journey to Babel?
Yeah, I think when you set up the parameters in describing how Journey to Babel was the first instance of the Tellarites, but in chronological terms, Enterprise is the first instance of Tellarites, and kind of reconciling the real world and the in-universe perspectives. I think you're going to have to be able to juggle between those perspectives to make any type of sense of seeing them in Journey to Babel. So I actually saw this episode today, actually, right before recording, and obviously, you know, with Star Trek and when they introduce many alien races, they go through many iterations. So when the Vulcans were first introduced, the Klingons, the Romulans, they're different in their first incarnations than what they became to be. And the Tellarites very much are in the same mold, although I think it's more pronounced because there are so few references to them, and there's just a huge gap of time between Enterprise chronologically in the real world and then what TOS was when it was first made. So when you see Ambassador Gav, you know, you see the argumentative nature of them. I think that's the one defining feature that is carried on in Enterprise. But clearly the way they talk, the way Ambassador Gav talks, it's, you know, it's very broken. It's very wooden. It's very almost kind of robotic in a sense. And it doesn't seem as lived in, or it doesn't seem as, you know, a fully fleshed out three-dimensional character that the Tellarites were in Enterprise. So I think that was jarring in terms of just seeing the cadence of how they were speaking. And obviously, you know, I'm the giant elephant in the room is you're working with 1960s prosthetics. So the Tellarites look incredibly different than the Tellarites of Enterprise. They have the hooves. They're really pink. They have clearly it's like a latex mask that's over it. So, you know, obviously there's that jarring visual distinction. So I think in terms of Enterprise, they did the best that they could, taking what they can from the original series interpretation of Tellarites. But they really updated, and I think they updated it really well in Enterprise. They made it really believable, but still recognizably Tellarite. So I think Enterprise just did a bang up job of updating the Tellarites to something that's just really believable and really just stands out in high definition.
How about you, Tommy? When you saw the Tellarites of the Journey to Babel episode, did they just kind of strike you as, wow, do you really think that you could have done a better job with the makeup? Or because you know that it's the late 1960s, this is a budget-blowing type of prosthesis that pretty much was the standard of the time, the higher standard, and it just caused certain technical flaws where you weren't really able to get any kind of true emotional content out of that character, out of Ambassador Gav?
I'm fairly indifferent to it, in much the same way that I'm fairly indifferent to the black and white people. You know, it's kind of corny, I guess, and it's 1960s. They didn't have, you know, squat for budget, so I let them go. You know, I pardon them. So they have the Tommy Craft pardon. Didn't really bother me that much, and I like the way Enterprise portrayed them. I think it was a great example of how you can update something and not have it be weird. And, you know, just as a tangential thing, I think this is a great reason why we should, if we, in an official Star Trek, if we ever show TOS Enterprise, we should update it.
Ooh.
That's a, it's very controversial.
Okay. Wow.
But it's
that's
clear.
It's a bold position, Tommy.
I know it is. But I think it's clear, though, that if you do it well, it is okay to update something for a modern audience. And I think Enterprise did that well. I like their makeup in Enterprise. I like the way they were portrayed.
So to sidebar what you're saying a little bit here, I'm not sure if a lot of people know this, but in Blade Runner, the final director's cut, which Ridley Scott had a chance to update probably one of the most signature scenes. And when I say signature, it is because the stunt double that doubled Joanna Cassidy's character was so blatantly obvious when she was running through panes of glass as Deckard, Harrison Ford's character, was gunning her down. They didn't have a chance to make that correction in post. And because of the technology today, they were able to basically rotoscope Joanna Cassidy's face into that shot. Actually, I think it was her whole body into that shot, plus a couple of other updates to create and finish and realize that as a whole scene. Do you think that it's possible to seamlessly integrate something like that, something like an updated Tellarite prosthetic on an actor in that same way, so that it can bring about a more dimensional and realistic approach to that scene? Do you think it would do anything for that scene or give those scenes in Journey to Babel any more credence than they have? Does it change the storytelling? Does it update it, or would it upset the fans in some way?
I think it's totally doable, totally possible. I think it would be really jarring, though, because the difference with the Blade Runner case is it's more of a continuity error that you're correcting, whereas in the TOS case, you're going back and you're making something that looks old look new.
But they're doing that with the ships.
I would say the difference between TOS Tellarites and Enterprise Tellarites, there's a huge difference between in that and then updating the Enterprise shots, which are, you know, you
right.
see it briefly, but, you know, TOS was never heavy on, like, the ships and, you know, extended scenes and extended battles. There's always quick shots of, you know, the Enterprise and surrounding space. Like, I feel like that's a whole different ball game.
Now, I would argue that their updates to the CGI, to the exterior shots of the Enterprise don't look that new. You can tell that they've been updated, but it's not like they updated it in a way where it was 1960s and now it looks like the JJ Enterprise. It still very much feels like an updated 1960s, whereas if you altered the Tellarite makeup to look like it does in Enterprise, I feel like you would be taking early 2000s or even current time, 2015, and suddenly transplanting it into the 1960s, and it would just feel kind of awkward to me. And also on a budgetary note, I think it would be a lot more time consuming to do that because there's a lot of motion tracking involved, and it's just a totally different workflow.
You know, the interesting thing is that at the end of Star Trek, the original series, this was the one and only time that we actually saw this race being so prominent that it is historically for the Federation. And throughout the course of other incarnations, series, and the movies that reflect the original series storyline, we only saw a smattering, and when I say smattering, of snippets here, snippets there, of both the Andorians and the Tellarites. And I still have a hard time kind of reconciling that in a way as a fan, because you can short shrift certain things, but when you're dealing with the history of your own legend, legacy, the history of the Federation, and rounding that out in terms of world building, don't you think that they would have taken some other opportunities to be able to at least give us more content somewhere along the line?
Well,
I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I think this is an interesting point because it really showcases the different eras that Star Trek has crossed in its production. And this is something I've alluded to before, in the 1960s, you really did not have much forethought into your stories or your characters or your overall world building. It was pretty much every episode was a reset. And we're starting to come out of this in the 1980s and 1990s when Next Gen and the other shows are on. But this idea of world building, I think, is not something that's really inherent or important during the time most of the Star Trek shows were made. Either it was not there or it was just starting to come into being. Whereas a lot of shows today, they're very careful in how they build the mythology of their universe, whatever that may be. And so I think it's just a sign of the times that Star Trek was made in, that this idea of the long-standing canon, the history of it, was not what was most important to telling your every week story.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case here. And, you know, Star Trek is, you know, it's imposing in a lot of ways for fans newcomers, because it's survived for so long and it's had so many different iterations. But technically, it's still one timeline, even with the deviation with the new movies. It's still technically all connected in some way. They're all connected in that way. And, you know, you just have, you know, you have to balance, like we talked about at the top of the show, with, you know, the real world and the in-universe perspectives. And I feel like there's a point in which you have to just say, this is just because the show was completely different, different time frame, different mindset, different production values, everything. And, you know, you try to retcon as much as possible, but, you know, I think just because they were almost, you know, like Tommy said, writing it as they go. And then there was also, when Gene launched Next Generation, there was a conscious decision to step away from anything TOS for a very long time, and until, you know, Sarek, that episode came in, they started introducing elements of TOS. But for a very long time, they just did not want to do anything associated with TOS. So, you know, there was also a conscious decision not to allude to Andor or Teller or Kirk or Spock in very overt ways. Although, when you take a look back at the totality of all the works years later, you kind of think like, oh, there are huge gaps when there should have been some continuity that have been consistent throughout all of the shows.
So before I change tone to get back to Enterprise in 2151, we do have a new Star Trek J.J. Abrams era, non-prime universe era movie that's going to be coming up with Simon Pegg. Do you think that this would be an opportunity to showcase the Andorians and the Tellarites in this story? Does that make any sense now for a new fan watching these updated TOS storylines? Does it make any sense to the history of what's being shown now in this reimagining of Star Trek? Because, again, it's not like these are just alien races that are thrown out there for throwing out alien races to put on screen. These are the pillars of the Federation, and we'll get back to that in a second when we talk about the Babel arc from Enterprise. Does this make sense for the new audience or no?
I would personally love to see an updated take on the Andorians and the Tellarites in a big budgeted feature film. I think that could be really cool because they'd have a lot of opportunities to do things with these characters and these designs they just couldn't do 10, 15, 20 years ago, and let alone on a TV budget. However, I think due to the quite large reaction from the fans that they should have gone in a different direction with Into Darkness. I don't expect them to really use much of Star Trek canon in the next movie. I would love to see it. I think it would be cool, but it just isn't relevant to your average fan to have Andorians or Tellarites.
I think to the extent that they can be included as you know, the bridge crew, or you see them on a ship or at Starfleet headquarters, I think that's probably going to be the best possible venue for them to show up. Much like Gala was, you know, an Orion female that was seen, that it was, you know, longtime fans recognized her, but new fans are just like, oh, it's a green-skinned alien. I think in the same way here, you know, longtime fans would recognize, oh, that's clearly an Andorian, or that's, you know, a Tellarite. But I think Tommy brings up a good point in terms of, I don't think they're going to be doing anything rehashing Journey to Babel or that type of storyline. And I think, you know, part of me is also glad that they're probably not going to do that. They want to tell new stories, but insofar as including them in the visual aesthetic and having them there, I don't see why not, because if they've certainly included new types of aliens in the past two movies, so why not throw in those types of aliens who would be new pretty much to new fans and would probably not know the difference, but for older fans they would. So I think that's a very easy win-win scenario
for them. They could always do it in the way they did with the Cations, where Kirk was in bed with two of them.
Yes. You
know, it was just like a throwaway
that's
thing.
Right, that's right. I totally forgot about
on
that.
On that shirt. Yeah. I don't think we've ever seen female Tellarites. I'm not sure where...
It's a fair point.
We have not.
Where we can go in that direction. And they could be like ridiculously aesthetically pleasing. Or
aesthetically
it could
pleasing.
Just be, you know, it could be Gavin, a giant moo-moo. But we're not... I'm not sure if we're going to go and speculate to that degree. But returning back to Enterprise and returning back to 2151, the Tellarites are reintroduced, much like the Andorians were reintroduced in the Andorian incident in season one. In season two, we have the reintroduction, if you will, to the Tellarite race in the episode Bounty. And Will, as you said in the notes, this is the first time where we've seen a fully realized three-dimensional ground in reality type of makeup that brings these Tellarites into more of a modern aesthetic. This was done by the brilliant Michael Westmore. And tell us a little bit about this episode. And do you think that it made a strong enough impression for fans, either returning fans from the original series who enjoy this subject matter from this timeline, and for new fans? Did it make a strong enough impression for the Tellarites to become relevant again in this timeline prior to the Coalition of Planets?
I think that's a tough question, because this episode Bounty comes right before the huge Zindi arc. So I feel like that's going to suck up a lot of the air and attention for the fandom at that time. And originally, reading Memory Alpha, the episode was not going to have a Tellarite as the bounty hunter. It was just going to be another random alien or another alien race. But they decided to go and say, you know what, why don't we make a Tellarite? Why don't we update that to see if we could do it and see if we can kind of throw that as a continuity bone to the fans. And barring the very start of the episode where Archer mentions to Trip that, you know, the Vulcans have encountered Tellarites and that they're argumentative by nature and that's their way, outside of that reference to the Tellarites, everything else beyond that is nothing that's specific to them as a race or specific to them as a society. Basically, you know, what you see from the bounty hunter is you see him as a fully fleshed out character in a way that you don't see the Ambassador Gav in Journey to Babel, or you don't see them in any other iteration. So you relate to the character, but you don't relate to the character in the sense that he is distinctly Tellarite. You just relate to the character as, oh, he is an alien that, you know, is a bounty hunter, but that has a surprising amount of empathy that you can relate to this character.
He was almost strangely proper in a way.
That's right.
There was a certain ethical moral code as a bounty hunter that he had, which was... It was strange, but you're like, that's something that you kind of come to know of as a well-traveled roguish type of character.
Yeah, he had a sense of nobility, right? He had a sense of, you know, he was a bounty hunter, but he wasn't a bounty hunter that was needlessly cruel or capricious, that he had a set of morals and a code. And he was doing what he had to do in order to get his ship back. But, you know, he wasn't evil per se. So in that sense, that it made Tellarites nominally more relatable to us as the audience, but there was nothing there for the audience to say, oh man, that's something that I'm going to take forward in terms of how I view Tellarites in the future.
I think just to piggyback,
well done. Well
thank
done.
You. Off that, it was a throwaway character in terms of the alien race. It was like your average Vulcan, Klingon, or whatever.
But so why then choose a Tellarite? Why not choose an Andorian or a myriad? They could have just thrown some no-name one-off species if you wanted to. Why a Tellarite, you think?
Well, I think as Will said, it was like to throw the continuity bone to the audience. And it was just like one of those things where as a fan, you say, oh, cool, that's a Tellarite. But other than that, I don't think there was any point for him to be a Tellarite, and I actually don't think he should have been. As our first introduction to Tellarites since TOS, seeing them on screen, and given their importance in the history of the Federation, I think he should have been some other race.
And that's what I was trying to get to with this introduction. Now, again, Bounty was a really cool episode. You had this really cool Bounty Hunter character. A lot of people like Bounty Hunters as characters. A lot of Star Wars fans do. I know that. But this doesn't give us any real purchase for understanding this new introduction to the Tellarites, because I think there are a majority of fans, when they were watching Enterprise, that were my age, that were in their late 20s, early 30s at the time, and we were all original series fans, and we were really excited that we were going back before Kirk, before Spock, before McCoy, as the marketing junket said, and digging into the history of the original series and the history of the first captain and the first Warp 5 capable ship. And then you see a Tellarite and you're like, wow, I remember these guys from Journey to Babel. That's not what I remember of a Tellarite. Even so, I only saw that that little snippet of him in there. I remembered that they were at least somewhat regal. Obviously, they were ambassadorial because that was the whole point of Journey to Babel. But these were founding members of the Coalition of Planets, and this is how we're going to introduce them back to the fans that are trying to support this show on a weekly basis. It's not something that I would come back to because this character really doesn't do anything for me in terms of furthering the world building of the Tellarites into what Archer is trying to do out there in space. So I agree, Tommy. I think this was probably a little bit more detrimental as a choice than, say, an Orion, because Orions were notorious pirates. Why not put them at the helm of being a bounty hunter in that area of space? It makes perfect sense.
Well, and think about how they reintroduced the Orions in Enterprise and how they reintroduced the Andorians. They both had a very specific story centered around them. It wasn't like there was just some random episode where they said, okay, well, let's have an... And I think it's more important than the Orions because we've seen them throughout other Star Trek. And but with the Andorians, if the first time we'd seen them is just some random Andorian pilot, it would not have been nearly as effective as that opening scene in the Andorian incident when Shran and his people bust down the door of Pajem. And you see those guys and you're like, oh, those are Andorians. That's cool.
Right.
But
right, no, totally.
It just, I wish they could have handled the Tellarites in that way.
Well, I mean, at least we get a little bit of a second chance, if you will, after the Zindi arc, because probably one of the most important story arcs, if not, in my opinion, the most important story arc of season 4 has to do with the importance of the Tellarites, and that's through the Babel arc. You have Babel 1, which starts off this entire journey of how the Federation, the kernel, the dream of the Federation is born. And so, Will, why don't you walk us through what happened in those three episodes and explain to us that second chance, that second win the Tellarites received as they were shown their due promise of being this important race to the Federation, to the future Federation.
Yeah, I think you're right there. This episode is such a critical building block. And you could just tell that from this arc, more stories are going to come if Enterprise would survive. So basically, the Babel arc is, in a way, a backdoor prequel, in a way, or a backdoor reference to Journey to Babel, right? Even in the name, right? So they're here, they're having negotiations about a trade dispute, and they have the humans and Archer, you know, coming in as that reluctant diplomat to mediate between these two warring sides. And previously, we had seen the Andorians and Vulcans at odds and humans mediating, but now you're seeing humans doing this again, but with Andor and Teller. And, you know, it harkens back to that disagreement or the friction between Sarek and Gav. But now you have this in a completely different scenario where the Andorians are accusing the Tellarites of attacking and destroying their own ship, you know, Sharan's Kumari. And you just set up an instance in which you know diplomacy has to play a big role, but you know that on each side you have such hotheads, right? Because the Andorians are disagreeable in their own way, and so are the Tellarites, disagreeable in their own way, right? And they're literally at each other's throats. You know, you can count them on both hands, like the times they're literally at each other's throats, right? Between Grawl and Tran. And I think it's a really good depiction of although the Tellarites aren't the sole focus of these episodes, they're pretty crucial linchpin in terms of the actions of one Tellarite almost brings it to a boil, almost destroys the entire negotiation, right? So Narg, who is Grawl's aide, you know, kills Talas, Sharan's beloved. So, you know, he's literally forcing everything to come to a head. And, you know, you have Grawl, obviously, at the end, after Archer fights on behalf of Narg and wins and beats Sharan, you have an instance in which a Tellarite can still overcome the prejudice, still overcome the tension that has arisen. And, you know, you can kind of see the formation of the Federation there, that not every action of an individual is going to define a race, that you need to work beyond those differences. And it was so important because this is the first time Tellarites actually had anything important to do, and it was the first time that it was relevant to what they were as a species, right? You know, you could just tell from the very few scenes that Sharan was talking about the Tellarites that he has such disdain for them on the same level as the Vulcans, if not more. And they're beginning to allude to the fact that the Tellarites are a significant race, right? They're going to be a significant building block to the formation of the Federation.
Well, let me put it to you this way then. With the introduction of the Tellarites in this arc, do you feel that they were able to focus on them in such a way where they didn't feel like just a catalyst for Sharan to be more important as a character? Because when I was watching these three episodes in particular, this is season four and Manny Coto now is the showrunner, and he knows that he has to start introducing very specific telltale and iconic figures, characters, races from the original series to start bringing in viewers, because season four is, right now, these are pretty rough waters, some pretty turbulent seas for the series in total. And because the Tellarites were in such a prominent episode of the original series, and because you have the ability to be able to do all of these incredible prosthetics, I never really felt that they were front and center as one of these species that are being focused on, like the Vulcans, because the Vulcans had a myriad of very specialized episodes, not just through T'Pol's character, but other Vulcans in general, like the Vulcan High Command, like Velos, and his complete ridiculousness when it comes to approaching how the Vulcans were kind of retconned in a way of being a little bit more sinister than we know them to be. So do you think that when the Tellarites were introduced here, we were trying to find an opportunity just to fit them in, or try to actually expound on their storyline in total for a possible season 5?
I think it was done well, and I think it was done as well as you could for the given that they really only had those three episodes to showcase the Tellarites. The thing with the Vulcans and the Andorians is they were focused on at least some point during all four seasons. So you had a lot more time to build, to develop the mythology of the Enterprise era. And the Tellarites, you had those three episodes and that was it, and I thought it was done pretty well. It didn't feel like to me they were brought in to simply service the Andorians or to service Shran. Their arc was handled well, and it lent itself well to what Archer was doing with the diplomacy, and it developed his character a lot, the things that he had to do to make that work. And I never really felt like the Tellarites were window dressing or anything like that. I thought they were handled well. I think the only problem is they just weren't handled until that point.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think I just want to take this opportunity to just say how much I love that opening to Babel 1 where Hoshi and Archer are just going at it, right? They're just insulting each other. And for a second there, I was like, are they being serious? I remember watching this episode for the first time. I didn't know what was going on. And I still think it's such an effective way to introduce, you know, the very familiar cultural, the one familiar cultural aspect of the Tellarites, that they're disagreeable for the sake of being disagreeable. But the way Archer and Hoshi were having that conversation, I think was just a really great and brilliant piece of just of writing that sets the stage for the introduction when they come aboard the ship. So I think Tommy hit the nail on the head. You know, I think these episodes really did the Tellarites justice. It's just that it took them, you know, 3.5 seasons and then that was it, right? There was, and the show was ended after season 4, so you don't really see much of them beyond that.
And I have to say that first conversation that Archer has when the Tellarites come aboard is freaking hilarious. When he says, "I didn't expect you to be so ugly," or something like that. And then they basically go on to insult each other for the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, the line was, "I didn't expect your ship to be so small and unimpressive." And Archer's like, "You know, I was thinking the same thing about you."
That was a different one, because that was later in the conversation.
Oh, was it later?
That
was after, oh, okay.
Yeah, that was because when he first boarded, it was such a great bit of filmmaking because it cut right to that. He boards and Archer, that's the first thing Archer says, "I didn't expect you to be so ugly." I think it was something that's complimenting or, you know, deriding his looks.
Right.
And then they continue to banter throughout the scene. And it was a great, fun way to introduce the Tellarites.
There's always an opportunity to fit more of Hoshi's specific skill set in these episodes. And I always thought it would have been really interesting to improve the world building and the cultural texture of a race like the Tellarites, which we don't know a lot of, still haven't really been exposed a lot of to their language, their foods. You get obviously brief snippets of that during certain conversations, but I really would have liked to have seen that opening, that cold opening between Hoshi and Archer done in the Tellarite language. Mm. And then done in such a way where Archer couldn't even really get it right. So when he's insulting the ambassador, he's doing it in such a poor manner where he's just butchering words. And this ambassador's like, "I'm not sure if to be offended or if I like you. Because you're trying obviously really hard to do something here and I'm not sure what it is. So let's just see how this thing evolves as the time goes by." And then Archer, we're like, "Oh gosh, I got that all wrong."
You know? Right, but see, I think that's a great point, but that's the catch, right? I mean, outside of Vulcans and Klingons, right, where there are instances where they speak in their native tongue, do we ever see any other race that, you know, we get to see aspects or snippets of their actual native tongue? Or is it just like, oh, we assume they can understand English and we can speak to them, right? I mean, I don't know if, I think that's just a trope of Trek, is that they don't have the time to, like, we're going to come up with this completely distinct language outside of, you know, the Vulcans need something, the Klingons need something, because they're going to always be there.
I want to just as an aside say that Star Trek actually does this better than pretty much any other science fiction property I've seen. I love Stargate. I really do. It was actually my first love. But, you know,
I thought your first love was Ninja Turtles, Tommy.
Well, when it comes to the whole sci-fi, the spaceship shows.
Splitting the fandom hairs. You have the Turtles on one side.
Well, see, the thing is, like, my real love would be Turtles going through the Stargate to find the Enterprise. But I digress.
This sounds like your next movie.
Yeah,
they're up the crossover. Funding.
Yeah. But it's just the point. They never even addressed this on Stargate. The whole idea that everywhere they went, everybody spoke English. But it was actually addressed a number of times in Star Trek and in Enterprise, the whole idea of the universal translator.
Right.
There were times where the UT stopped functioning and suddenly they couldn't understand each other. And of course, there's a lot of open questions, especially in the technology of Enterprise. How exactly does the UT work? Because sometimes we see them wearing it on their chest, like as an accessory, as we see in Terra Prime and Demons.
Yeah.
And so does it work like a speaker? I don't think that's the case, because they always seem to act as though they perfectly in their head hear their own language. But I mean, so that you can have a whole discussion about, is it some kind of neurological interface or whatever? But I think the whole idea of the alien language is actually handled pretty well. And especially when it comes to Star Trek, it's handled well in Enterprise, because there's often times where it doesn't work. And Hoshi does have to use her skills. I just don't think it was quite enough. But compared to other Star Trek, I think it's handled pretty well.
Oh, that's definitely a fair point. That's a fair point.
I mean, I'd like, take a look at it this way. It's almost as if you could use a little bit of the Tellarite language just to give a little bit more cultural flavor to this race that we just really, again, don't know that much of. And if Archer just automatically, as soon as the ambassador walks off the gangplank and he just throws him the most ridiculously well-rehearsed, well-practiced, polished insult of all time, and the Tellarite ambassador says something in English, just as witty and as retortful.
Ooh, that's
and
good.
Archer's just completely taken aback. And then now you have the understanding that Archer and Hoshi and probably the Universal Translator have been utilized in such a way to do this. At the same time, this is being shared with all of these almost member races so that these talks can go a little bit more smoothly. And now you're just seeing this kind of, you know, back and forth in this evolution of communication, which is, you know, at the heart of all this, because everything in this arc goes awry because communication is just so poorly handled between the ambassadorial duties that Archer has. He doesn't know how to handle someone as volatile as the Tellarites, as emotionally unstable as the Andorians, and someone who, you know, and the Vulcans, who aren't really kind of investing themselves right now because they want to see what's kind of going to play out. So I just like seeing little snippets of language here and there, because it offsets the audience a little bit to, like, what is this all about? And I want to see more. And then secondly, it's because it just gives a rounder characteristic to alien races and alien cultures. That's just, for me personally, I like seeing that.
No, I agree. I think that's also a fair point too. And I feel like I've been playing devil's advocate at least, you know, a few times this episode, but, you know, I agree on all the points in terms of, I think Star Trek does a good job and of handling those languages. And yeah, you know, the Tellarites, you know, of all the races, for them to start developing at least a syntax, or them start developing an alien language that's in their native tongue, you know, and the Tellarites, a founding member of the Federation, should have been at the top of the list. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
So between, say, Journey to Babel and the episodes that we saw the Tellarites in Enterprise, that kind of surmises about what? About 90% of what we've seen in terms of overall on-screen time of the Tellarites. But there were little bits and pieces here and there within the different series. So, Will, you were talking about the Tellarites and how they were referenced in Deep Space Nine. So can you explain a little bit more about that? And why do you think all the way in Deep Space Nine were the Tellarites interesting to at least Ron Moore and the writers to bring back as a reference?
I think because, you know, Ira Baer and Ron Moore and the entire writing crew there, I think they grew up on TOS, and I think they were far enough removed from Gene Roddenberry and him wanting to remove any TOS, overt TOS references in any of the new iterations of Trek. And I think they just wanted to be able to, if they can, why not put it into a script? You don't have to budget for it or design something or do something sophisticated. But to the extent that they can do something like that and add at least references that, you know, we acknowledge that this exists. We acknowledge that the world is larger, that what has happened before still exists in some way, right? So the most prominent reference in Deep Space Nine is in the episode Apocalypse Rising, when the Klingon is talking about a raid that he did on a Federation ship and how he killed the Tellarite helmsman. And, you know, I think, you know, they reference to you know, him, you know, it being a pig, you know, that he was detested by the pig-like look of the Tellarite. So it was clearly a reference that they knew wasn't just going to be a throwaway to the fans, that fans have been longtime watchers would understand that this is not just them inserting this one reference to Tellarites, that they knew what the Tellarites were, and that yes, in this world they do exist. We just don't see them, but they do exist. And I just think because, you know, it came from a mentality of, you know, why not? But you also saw them in the scenes in Voyage Home, in the Federation Council chambers when they're trying Kirk. And I think this was a big deal because this was probably the first time on screen that you saw a large amount of aliens that weren't Vulcans or Klingons, that they were really trying to expand it. And it was the first time, and I think still really the first and only time that we really saw the Federation Council and all the races there. And, you know, Andorians are there. There's a Tellarite, you blink and you miss it. There's a Cation. So I think this was another instance in which they said, you know, we don't have to craft an elaborate backstory for them, but we'll just throw it in there and it'll allow the fans to know that, yes, we acknowledge the fact that there's a larger universe there and they exist. It's just that we don't talk about them very much, but we know that they're there.
I think this speaks to probably my biggest issue with how Star Trek has been produced. And it's that there's this vast world. And I feel like a lot of times the writers are afraid to use it. They're afraid to really dive into a lot of the elements that are there and bring them front and center. And it's kind of like how we never once saw a Vulcan ship until Enterprise. And, you know, you would think that at least in the Dominion War, you would have seen Vulcan ships, but instead all you really see are a bunch of Galaxy class and Excelsior and Nebula class and what have you, and of course Klingon and Romulan ships, and the same with the Tellarites. And I think Enterprise started to do this pretty well, especially when season two we started to get some of this, but especially season four, I think they still missed some opportunities in Enterprise, because it struck me as really odd when I heard that the writers, they wanted to basically do a bunch of new stuff with Enterprise. And it seems like you're missing a great opportunity as a prequel to go and dig into all of these elements you have from your vast universe. And then just to say, well, we're not going to use them. We're just going to do a bunch of new stuff. And I think, of course, by the time we got into season four, they realized that that's not the best approach to take. And they started doing all this prequel element stuff. And I think that's what they should have been doing from the beginning. And it's why, once we finally see the Tellarites, it's really cool. And, of course, they did do, obviously, prequel stuff at other points in the show, like with the Andorians, but this still doesn't change the fact that a lot of the stories are completely unrelated, essentially, to Star Trek canon. And I just wish that in Enterprise and in all the shows that there were more stories that really tied to the mythology of the universe.
Well, Will, you actually wrote some really interesting notes about where we could have gone in season five. And Tommy, there's one question I do want to ask you about Horizon and how that could have related to the Tellarites. But one of the questions was, do the Tellarites still have their own military force after joining Starfleet? Now, we know the Andorians have the Imperial Guard, and we've seen fleets of Andorian ships, specifically Shran's ship, the Kamari. I would have to assume that because they are a spacefaring race and because they are warp capable, that they would have their own military in some fashion. I don't know we could only speculate in our headcanon what it would look like. I'm thinking something very almost space dwarfish because of the way that the Tellarite's physiology is. And their hand-to-hand combat is probably a little bit more brutal and a little bit more blunt because that's just the way that they are. You know, there's not a lot of gracefulness to this race. You know, they're very direct. I think they're probably the headbutting race is what I think that's the title of the episode. They're the headbutting race, you know, where they like butting heads literally, figuratively and spiritually, because all they want to do is argue and they want to debate the point until it's ground to the finest powder, because this is who they are. It's not because they are adversarial. It's because just culturally, I think this is just what they are as a people. They like being at odds. I think it's what makes them grow, or at least it challenges themselves in some way as a culture. So you have that. Then you have, how do they take that and insert themselves into this larger conglomeration of a interracial government or a multifaceted government? Because now you have to, quote unquote, play nicely with others. And yes, they started doing that in the Babel arc, but I think there is that understanding all of the different races that form the coalition of planets still stay somewhat secular, if you will, within their own race. They have their own military, but it's part of Starfleet. They have their own branch in the government, but it's still very their own. In a way that the United Nations is more of a melting pot, they're still very homogenized. So how do you think that we would have been able to see more of the Tellarites mixed in that way in seasons 5, maybe 6 and 7? And Tommy, did you even think about using the Tellarites as a reference when you were doing Horizon?
Well, first off, I just want to say that this goes, I think, to what I was saying, that we have like 28 seasons of Star Trek, if I'm correct, between all the shows. And realistically, we shouldn't have to be asking these questions about what is apparently supposed to be such an important race when you have 28 seasons of storytelling to answer these questions and you never do. When it comes to Horizon, honestly, they never factored in even a little bit. Neither them. I wanted to include them, and I especially wanted to include the Andorians, but I was fairly certain that within the limitations of my budget, I was not going to be able to convincingly convey Andorian or Tellarite makeup. And so I just found it better to just essentially leave them out altogether. And I think that's unfortunate, but I also think it's better than, you know, having these throwaway lines about, well, the, you know, the Tellarites and the Andorians are here, but we're just not going to show them. I always thought that that kind of stuff is a little bit weird. So in regards to Horizon, no, they didn't really factor in at all.
In terms of how they're structured going forward, I guess, in subsequent seasons, I think there's a lot to mine there narratively. I think it's mentioned in the books, Rise of the Federation, which are actually a great read. But I think they bring up a really good point of how they begin to integrate the different crews, integrate the different technologies together. And I think, obviously, that's not going to be, you know, canon in the same way that a televised show or movie is going to be. But I think you can surmise or extrapolate that because humanity is central to all of this, in the sense that they're the ones that are least hated. Like, everyone gets along with the humans. It's almost like they're the Kevin Bacon of the Alpha Quadrant, right? That could also be the title of this show, right? Or another show.
The Kevin Bacon of the Alpha Quadrant.
Because, you know, what's the one thing that unites all of them? They like humans, right? That the one thing that can get them to the table is humans. They're always the pass-through. So in the same way...
And coincidentally, Kevin Bacon is a human, just saying.
And bacon, right? True. Bacon, Tellarites, pigs, pork, works on so many levels.
So many.
That's not even what I was saying, but it's a great point that you pointed that
six
out.
6 degrees of Tellarites.
Oh, man. But yeah, so I think the fact that, you know, humans are the ones that are least hated, is, I think that would make sense that they'll, you know, if they're going to choose a ship design to base a new united fleet on, they'll choose it based on the race that they disagree with the least, dislike the least, and they'll contribute different things to it. And I would imagine in my own headcanon that, you know, the Tellarites have their own defense forces. You just don't see them. That, you know, they'll leave exploring and contacting to this neutral arbiter, Starfleet, and the humans can have those ships. But, you know, if they ever, you know, if the alien invader ever comes to Teller's borders, you're going to have the Tellarite fleet there. In the same way, you're going to have the Andorian fleet there or have the Vulcan fleet. It's just that we only see one aspect of it in Star Trek. We see the exploratory arm or Starfleet's going out. And I think that's one way that I can reconcile it based off what we know from the cultural characteristics of humans and Tellarites and Vulcans and Andorians. But it's an interesting question because, you know, going forward, we always see the same types of Starfleet designs. It's a saucer, nacelles, and we know those are humans based off Enterprise. Enterprise has established that the saucer and the nacelles are unique design to Earth Starfleet. So why 300 years later are Starfleet ships still using predominantly an Earth design, right? So I think, you know, that raises interesting questions, which unfortunately, you know, we're gonna have to only speculate on. But personally speaking, I always thought that, you know, the Tellarites are never gonna give up, you know, their own culture, their own technology or designs, and that they're just there, but we don't see it.
Yeah, that's always the one thing about Star Trek that always is so interesting is the what happens to the different influences of the other races onto Starfleet, because you're right. Everything has become Federation clean, if you will. Everything has become this one true source of all of the different types of designs, when it either starship design or tricorder design or phaser design, everything has to do with going back to that one race that kind of tied everything together. Now, again, we don't know technologically if the influences were there. We don't know if the Tellarites were able to streamline warp reactors or get more optimization out of dilithium crystals, because we never got a chance to see that, or the writers never had a chance to interject that into the series. That would have been interesting to see. If not in the aesthetic aspect of Starfleet, at least within the deeper levels that you don't see, like engineering or martial arts, hand-to-hand combat, diplomacy, who knows? But because we say this all the time, it doesn't make it any less true. The possibilities that could have been explored in future seasons of Enterprise were sky's the limit. They were only limited by their own imagination, and unfortunately we weren't able to tap into that. So in the final thoughts, Will and Tommy, if there was one thing that you really would have liked to have seen the writers or the creatives from Enterprise impart from the Tellarites to the audience, and something that you never got a chance to see, what do you think that would have been?
It's almost like I don't know what I want, because we've still been just only given so little. I mean, what we have is really great in the Babel arc, and obviously you have them introduced to TOS, but even taking those into account, there still isn't enough there for me to almost say, like, what else would I like to have seen? Because there's almost like there's not enough for me to grab onto outside of kind of the more direct components of how they were a founding member. Like, we've never seen a female Tellarite. We've never seen, like you said before, Norm, the language that they speak. You know, they're always in relation to a negotiation. They're always there as part of a larger context. Humans are there. Vulcans are there. Andorians are there. They're playing off these other races, right? But we've never seen anything yet in terms of them specifically, Tellarite specifically, and only Tellarite specifically. You have that with the Andorians, you have that with Vulcans, obviously, humans, no question, right? But with Tellarites, the only times we've seen them have been in relation to how they've interplayed with these other races. So to ask that question, I think for me, I'm going to have to say, you know, I really don't even know what I would like to have seen, but I think just more about their culture, more about their society, you know, maybe some more grounded stories about, you know, more personal or personality driven stories, as opposed to kind of larger intergalactic politics type questions, you know, something that's not that, you know, doesn't require an ambassador to be there. Right. Would have been interesting to see in, you know, the future seasons that we never got.
So I agree that it's hard to pick something that you would like to see expanded upon. And I think the general sentiment that I have, which I've felt in a lot of ways is that I just would like to have seen more. Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, with Enterprise, that they were on the cusp of some of the most mature storytelling that Star Trek has ever had. And by mature, I don't mean in a TV MA way, but in just the level of their storytelling. They approach things in a way that none of the other shows did. I've probably said this before, but, you know, on Voyager, in one episode, they'd practically get the ship blown half to hell, and then in the next episode, everything would be completely fine. I think that is, in a lot of ways, a symptom of the constraints they may have had in their time. But Enterprise was starting to move away from that kind of thing. They were moving into a much more serialized, and not necessarily in a way where every episode has to be this big tie-in to a larger narrative, but in that it was a very... It was just symptomatic of the time that TV was coming into with Enterprise, where they were building much more of their show and of their universe than I think the other shows did. And I wish we could have gotten further seasons, as the sentiment always goes, because I think especially in seasons 3 and 4 is when they really started to do that. And it's when we really started to see things with the Tellarites, for example, that were really interesting. And I think, as a whole with Star Trek, I would just, and this applies to Tellarites, I would just like to see more capitalization on the mythology of the universe versus, and this also includes humans, but versus just the rinse, wash, rinse, repeat Starfleet approach. And I think there could have been a lot of potential there for Tellarite stories, if all of that makes sense.
No, and for me, I mean, I agree with that. I would have liked to have seen a lot more of the Tellarites involved. And I think, in my one last thought, if Shran was going to be part of season 5 as a main cast member, as a part of the staple of the crew, not of the NX-01, but you're gonna, you know, just a regular of the Enterprise crew, then I think it would have been safe to say that we probably would have seen maybe another Tellarite character that's would have had a couple of appearances a bit more regular on the show, because that just seems kind of hand in hand with where we were going in this storyline, where the Tellarites are starting to be a little bit more proactive in what was happening with Starfleet and seeing a little bit more of their influence diplomatically, where that would rub Shran the wrong way, and that would make for some seriously fantastic storytelling, because Shran, I think, in some ways, liked his friendship with Archer and liked his position, at least where he was headed in not just the Andorian side of the government, but Starfleet as well, because he likes being in the middle of it. And I don't think that he wanted to have anyone kind of wedge their way in between what he was doing and... I think this is the sheer fun he was having with Archer. And I think the Tellarites could have been a really interesting forced way of making Shran just always on edge. And having Shran always on edge is a fantastic thing, because it brings out the best in Jeffrey Combs. But again, for me, I think that just the sheer fact that we didn't get enough of the Tellarite culture makes my own question a little bit difficult to answer, but that's what we like doing here. We like speculating as much as we can. And one last thing, and I say this in the most respectful and Tellarite way possible, I can't believe that this is all I got from my hosts in this show. I could have bled more from a stone.
Well, so.
I would
we can
come
only
back
do
with
so much with such an
weighty.
Inept leader. We're just taking our cues from an incompetent leader.
See, I think we should have been more argumentative on this show. At least it would have been in the spirits of the Tellarites.
Yeah, I just didn't have the energy, so I'll let you guys argue.
All right, actually, all kidding aside, thanks guys so much for bringing all of what we could possibly know about the Tellarites, I think, to a show, because again, there wasn't really a lot to
we talked a while, yeah. But you know, there's not a lot to go on. So I think that says a lot that we're able to at least, you know, have this robust conversation about them.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot that, again, could have been there. And I think there's a lot of passion for this race because they were so important. And as fans of anything, of this show or any other shows or any other fandoms that you like digging into the history. You like digging into more of the lore because we as fans, that's just what we do. And that's what we love. And it was just so much fun talking about Tellarites. And I do think we probably could have been a little bit more argumentative. But hey, you know what? You can only do so much in a show. So thanks, guys, for having such a great show. And this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some of the things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Set this movie at the end of the five-year mission. Skip ahead 5 years, you know, kind of like Dark Knight or whatever. And then say, okay, we've had all these adventures, blah, 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 blah. And now we're at the end. We're about to go home, you know, and it's been, a fun time was had by all.
Earl Grey.
Again, you know, because it's January, my ship was shot beyond the bounds of normal interstellar travel to the center of the galaxy, but we were back in time for tea.
The orb.
They're not even right. Thinking about it at this point. Okay, how do we start the resistance? Yeah. How do we do all this?
Yeah.
Because they have become comfortable with where they are and thinking that they're doing all they can. And yet we know, as the audience, that they're not.
To the journey!
I want you to say right now in front of our friends, okay? And in front of me and the Lord Almighty, what is your favorite season?
Okay, this isn't the favorite season.
I want you to tell me what your favorite season is.
Daniel and Darren, promise we won't ever be like this.
The Ready Room.
So what's the deal? You know, does Tom have a dad we don't know about?
Apparently.
Because who was this guy that he was remembering
as
his dad?
Was that Nick Locarno's dad?
That was Nick Locarno's dad, yes.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But I mean, here's the question, John. If you're living Fight Club, then, you know, we have to ask. If you could fight anyone, who would you fight?
William Shatner.
All right.
Literary Treks.
The main storyline here is the battle for the Vulcan soul. They are one of the most logical races, and yet they have an intensely spiritual aspect to them.
Axanar, the official podcast.
You were there. Mm. How long did we wait for them to try and reach that footage?
Oh, man. It was at least as long as the Enterprise penetrating V'ger's outer shield to getting into the actual machine core.
The 602 Club.
So, as far as the realism question is concerned, whether or not it's the right thing to do, it's the Marvel way to do it. I mean, I think that's the defining difference between Marvel and DC.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows here on Trek FM and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. Now, if you're an Apple user, please hit the subscribe button. That helps us out tremendously, and it makes it easier for other listeners or new fans to find the show as they search iTunes, because that just gives us higher visibility. If you like what you hear on Warp 5 or on any of the other Trek FM network shows, please also consider giving us a rating. We like 5 stars, but be as honest as you can, because that helps us increase our visibility for new listeners, and it also allows us to see what is working for you. In terms of being hosts, we love being able to tailor our content to our listeners and make sure that you're getting your best bang for your buck for your time, because thank you for investing in an hour or an hour and a half of your time or more and supporting Trek FM, because we love doing this for you. You're our fans, and this is what we like doing for our fans. Now, if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link there as well. Now, Will and Tommy, please let our listeners know, and all of our fans out there who are listening to the show, how they can get in contact with you on the interwebs and across all signals on subspace.
So you can find me on Twitter at @Will_Wynn, spelled N-G-U-Y-E-N. And of course, you can find me in the Babel Conference, which is the namesake of the Journey to Babel or episode, which is our dedicated Facebook listeners group. So you can always find me there. And I'm also the content manager for the network. So if you have any ideas on what to discuss in the future, or if you want to, you know, wrap on ideas and concepts we've talked about in the past, just feel free to drop me a line.
And you can find me on the Star Trek Horizon Facebook page. And for those who don't know, it's an Enterprise-based Star Trek fan film that I've been working on for about the past 2.5 years. And it's basically, it's my baby. And so the Facebook page is all me posting and responding. So if you'd like to get in touch, that's facebook.com/STHorizon. Or you can just search it in the Facebook search bar and search for Star Trek Horizon.
Thanks, guys, so much. And for all of our listeners out there, Tommy and Will, they work really hard on the show. So please drop them a line and let them know how much you appreciate how hard they work and all of the efforts that they bring to the show, because I just couldn't do this without them. They do a terrific job in bringing me content and just breaking down all of the great points that we can bring to you here on the show. And that's a great way of showing your support. Another way that you can help us here on the network show a little bit more support is to help these shows come to you each week through Patreon. Please consider becoming a patron of the network on Patreon if you visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You'll find ways to support this network. Now, this network is just independently run by all of the hardworking cast and crew here at Trek FM, your hosts, your producers, your editors. We are fan-funded, and those funds come from you. And the best way to get in touch with us to do so and support us is through Patreon. Through the funding, you can get milestone contribution levels based on your participation with incredibly great perks like early access to content, possibly getting this show before anyone else does. Access to exclusive content, things that you have never seen or heard on Trek FM, kind of like an after hours with the hosts, if you will. Producer credits, seats on our content development team, and that means helping possibly drive future content for shows that you support, and a whole lot more. So we really appreciate any support that you can give us and hope you'll join our team. Again, you'll find these details at patreon.com/trekfm. Floyd Dorsey is actually one of the associate producers for Warp 5, as am I, and we both started our journey here to support the network and this particular show on patreon.com. I can't thank Floyd enough for all the support that he gives us here on patreon.com and on the network and, of course, on the Babel Conference, Trek FM's dedicated Facebook listeners page. Now, if you'd like to get in touch with here at Trek FM on the network, you can always drop us a line on TrekFM/content and look at the sidebar on the show page, because you can drop us an audio message or a subspace message, if you will, on speakpipe.com/TrekFM. You can also contact us through all the various social media ways on the internet, such as Twitter at TrekFM, Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM, and again on the Babel Conference. The Babel Conference is our listeners' page on Facebook, where we have the most amazing discussions that either continue what you've heard here on the network or have listeners just bring up incredibly pertinent and fact-filled and deep conversational ideas, where you as listeners can feel free to just express how much love you have for Star Trek or just talk about all the ideas that you would like to talk about with your hosts on the network. And you can do that on the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, in your search field, or go to our website at Trek FM and click the discussion on the menu bar. Now, before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps bring Warp 5 and all of our shows to you each week. And that sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Now, a lot of us have very busy lives, and we like getting to some of these audiobooks when we can. And the best way to do it is through Audible, because they allow you to get access to all the books you've always wanted to read, but you never thought you'd have time for. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial, just to test out how great this system is. Go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. That's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Warp 5 and Trek FM, the host network. Also, don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space. Now, this is a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The NSS Enterprise orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and you can make that happen. So please, visit enterpriseinspace.org and find out more and how to get your seat on the mission. Now, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can always find me here on the network or on the Babel Conference, our Facebook listeners page, as I mentioned before. You can also find me on Twitter at Norman Lau. That's N-O-R-M-A-N-L-A-O. And I am also a proud supporter of Alec Peters and the Axanar Project. And you can find me on the dedicated Axanar fan group page on Facebook. And lastly, I am a proud supporter of Trek FM through Patreon, as I have discussed before. And I am an associate producer of 4 shows here on the network. Warp 5, The Orb, The 602 Club, and Axanar, the official Axanar podcast. So thanks everyone for listening, and join us again next time here in the conference room for another episode of Warp 5.